A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Do you enjoy this podcast but wish you had more weekly short doses of insights and nuggets? Well, if you didn't know, I recently launched an email newsletter where you can join and connect with a community of like-minded young women around the world, also on the journey of personal growth. This weekly email includes everything from mindful insights and finds, tips on living well, relationships, my personal experiences, and a lot more. Subscribe to get your weekly email newsletter. The link is directly in this podcast episode show notes, or you can head directly to my website at emilyelizabeth.blog and you can sign up from there.
Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast. Hello, hello, friends. Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to your weekly dose of What Fulfills You. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And for today's guest episode, I am pulling one from the vault and an episode that I found very, very valuable for myself. And this episode originally released last December, 2023. But as I've shared before, I often find a lot of value in podcasts reposting episodes that were released in the past, especially maybe if I didn't follow the podcast yet at the time, or if I don't make time to scroll and find different episodes from the past. And so I have on Julianne Fraser, who is a digital marketing expert and founder of Dialogue New York, a leading global influencer marketing agency on a mission to thoughtfully connect brands with creatives to create meaningful dialogues on the internet that truly resonate. She started the agency 6 years ago and has built a roster of top-tier clients from Sakara, Seed, and Brooklinen to Adidas, Love Wellness, and many more. One of the big reasons I pulled this episode from the vault is because I was actually watching a real clip of this conversation. And I remember nodding my head and I was like, wow, there were so many gems that I learned from Julianne. And I'm going to be really honest as well. I actually have written her down as someone that models more or less a lifestyle that I want to have in my future as well as an entrepreneur, as someone that's passionate about what she does and wants to be able to continue to do so. And also be a mom in the future. And that's something she talks about. She's talked about her marriage and partnership, the commitment that it takes, the work that it takes, as well as her process and her decisions in how she raises her daughter, who is now, I believe, if she said a year and a half when this podcast was out, then that means her daughter is probably 2.5 years old. But I just was, again, very inspired by the conversations I had with her before the actual recording, as well as during the recording. And so I learned a lot from her myself, and I really think this episode would be quite helpful for those of you who are interested in personal growth, career, and ultimately building and designing a life that you want for yourself. And so, with that being said, let's welcome Julianne to the podcast. Julianne, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very excited. As I told you earlier, our coffee convo a couple weeks ago had me very inspired. We talked about a lot of things, but I am very curious to start with your career journey and your background and everything that you do. And then, of course, we'll tie it in to you being a mom and just being a badass as a whole. But let's start there. Like, when did you start your company? Share a little bit about your company and how you got into the industry.
Yeah, so I'm actually from Western Canada originally, and I moved to New York probably 11 years ago to attend FIT. So that was sort of my like foray into the Big Apple and my introduction to the city. And so right after I graduated, there was like a guy who was guest lecturing in one of my classes, and I, you know, he was mentioning there was an opportunity for a social media coordinator, which nowadays that's like such a common job, but you know, Instagram had just launched around that time, and so people weren't paying attention to social media, nobody cared, it wasn't part of marketing strategies, and so that was my first role at Ian Schrager Hotels, you know, Edition Hotels in Public, the same sort of group. And it was such an amazing opportunity to really like fly under the radar, and nobody was paying attention to what I was doing, but kind of test and learn and start to build, you know, organic relationships with influencers at the time. So, you know, the Kiara Fragnes of the world, or Mariana Hewitt, or Chriselle Lim, all of them were coming to New York, and we were doing these exchanges for hotel rooms at the time. And so that's sort of where it all began. And because the industry obviously took off, my career really like catapulted quickly and, you know, took a number of different roles, both on brand side and agency. But it came to a point 6 years ago where I just was realizing the influencer marketing world was so, you know, oversaturated. I call it the Wild Wild West. There were so many different approaches, and I felt like there was an opportunity to really kind of like break through the noise and do something different. So I launched my company Dialogue 6 years ago. It was just myself. And as a marketer, I think you put so much pressure to launch a brand in such a, like, you know, robust way. But I did the complete opposite to that. I had no website. I had no social presence. I was just a one-man show. And I just went off of my reputation and relationships in the industry to get my first couple of clients, and thought, let's give this a go, commit to six-month contracts. And yeah, the rest is history. We're now, you know, we've grown to a team of 10. We're based in Williamsburg, and we've worked with a lot of really amazing clients over the years. So growth happened organically.
Yeah. You mentioned that you wanted to take a different approach to it and kind of break through the noise. Why did you want to specifically focus on influencer marketing versus maybe other aspects of social media? And as you can, as you, we both know, it's expanded so much beyond influencer marketing. It's also so much like social media strategy and like aesthetics and like all these different things that honestly I'm sure it takes a whole team to very much do. But why focus specifically on influencer marketing during that time?
Well, I think a little bit of, you know, it's funny, I'm reading a book right now, and of course I'm forgetting the title of it, but I like was devouring it last night. And there was a chapter in it that says, like, so much of your life is about dumb luck. And there's so much that you can do strategically and like really like, you know, focus on building your career. But it just, I happened to fall into this world of social media early on. I happened to get an expertise in influencer marketing. So it definitely wasn't calculated. I think my expertise and knowledge grew quickly in a time where nobody knew anything about influencer marketing.
So that's true.
I think you pointed out a really great point, though. When starting my company, I have always been really hyper niche and just offering influencer marketing. My background has been in performance marketing and social media marketing and content creation, digital PR. But I realized, you know, there was just a really specific need for brands to understand how to approach building a really authentic community of influencers and creators. And that was just, it happened to be my expertise. So I would say it's kind of serendipitous in a way, but also I just had a feeling in my gut that when you, I feel like in life, windows of opportunities open, and they're not huge doors. They're just small little windows, and you can miss them if you don't, you know, jump on the opportunity. But I just saw this small window of opportunity where I thought, okay, I can do this better and more efficiently, more meaningfully. And so I went for it.
How long did it take you to grow your team? You said it's now a team of 10. So 6 years, and I mean, that's awesome.
I mean, I think, again, like, I was so focused on just getting the work done. So one of my first clients was an old boss of mine. She was the VP of marketing at Shiseido. And so Shiseido, being a huge, huge, huge beauty brand, was my first client. Worked with them for 3.5 years. And that just, you know, built at least a base when I started. And then, you know, I think the next big opportunity came with Sakara Life. And that was, again, a referral of someone in my network. And Sakara Life opened up the doors to Daily Harvest, and Daily Harvest opened up the doors to Seed Probiotics and Brooklinen and Our Place and all of these, you know, clients and our roster started to mount and get, you know, larger and larger and sort of more exciting. But it very much happened step by step. So similarly, my company grew in the same way. It was just me for, say, the first 8 months. I hired one employee. And I think it wasn't until about 3 years ago, so 3 years into starting Dialogue, where I started working with a business coach that completely kind of broke open my limiting beliefs or broke down my limiting beliefs. Yeah. And that led me to really an extreme amount of growth quickly.
Right. What was your, because we talked about that on our coffee date, if you will. And I remember you mentioned that this coach helped you significantly with breaking through those limiting beliefs. I'm curious, was one of them ever the fear of going from one woman show to now paying employees full time, how that looks for how much you get to take home? You know what I mean? Because I could totally see that that's often a battle from, you know, solo entrepreneur into growing a team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel I wasn't necessarily as concerned with growing my team because it was calculated in consulting as opposed to launching a startup. There's a set amount of revenue, there's contracts in place, you know what you're going to be receiving, and you know what you can invest in.
Right.
I think where the major limiting beliefs were, no one could ever manage my client meetings except for me. Nobody could ever do my 60-page strategy decks except for me. That's only something I can do as a consultant. I'm never going to be able to. I was living in Paris at the time and working New York hours. So I was working till like 1 in the morning because clients are going to drop me if I all of a sudden I'm choosing my own hours. So all of these, like this noise. And slowly working with Ben, I started to dismantle all of these beliefs where absolutely you can find someone who can run your client meetings far better than I am. And my team as a unit produces far better strategies than I ever did by myself. And setting boundaries to say that I want to do all my meetings in the morning Eastern time is not a big deal. Yeah. So, you know, slowly starting to unravel that really helped me grow because it allowed me to like empower and delegate a lot of the work and you know, trust others to do it. And so that's where you grow. If you get stuck in the idea that only you can do it, you'll never, you know, scale.
Yeah, and you mentioned that your team as a unit ended up being able to have these meetings and have very similar strategies. And I think you alluded to that in a coffee conversation too, which is almost kind of learning from your approaches and then applying that themselves. How did you teach that to them in a way that enabled them to take that into their own approach versus almost like hand-holding the whole way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel I was just chatting with someone over coffee this morning about hiring, and I think there's two ways to go about it. I was, you know, a small company, so I was hiring more junior level team members and spending, you know, years of mentorship and training. It's not something that, like, you know, people say, well, how did you do it? You now have a team that is really, you know, really running the show and they're doing incredible work without me really being involved in the day to day. That didn't happen overnight. And there's two ways you can think about hiring. You can hire someone really senior who has that skill set that can come in automatically. But I you know, really identified individuals that were values aligned with our values at Dialogue, that had the hunger and excitement in them to learn and were passionate about what we do and really loved our industry. But I really like standardized it in the sense where we had training. You know, every Friday afternoon was client management training. And it's not necessarily the hard skills. It's the soft skills of reading someone's personality, adapting to a client's, you know, needs. If is someone have a huge ego? Is someone really insecure? Is someone getting a ton of pressure from their CEO internally? Is someone really burnt out and not enjoying their job? And recognizing that in a client and then adapting the way we provide our services. So it sounds really frivolous to like train a team member, but that's actually what leads to our client retention and our connection with our clients and our relationships, because we can recognize what they need, and we adapt our services, our strategies, our approach for them. And yeah. so it's that soft skills of negotiating, client management,
right,
recognizing red flags, just like yeah. the kind of EQ,
yeah,
which I actually did like standardized training for my team around that.
Yeah. And so did you feel like originally, because I could imagine myself very similar, especially when it comes to like my podcast and my entrepreneurship life, I think there's a lot of that mentality too, where maybe I'm the only one exactly. that has that EQ yep. level to understand that. So I need to be the one speaking to, you know, the head of the whatever, right? And yep. so that's kind of fascinating to hear that from you, like learning to break through from that belief, like that I'm the only one
yeah.
that can connect with the client like this, because this person might not have the skill set yeah. yet.
And the amount of times I'd roll my eyes and be like, no, like you just don't really understand. Like,
oh.
I'm the only one that can like right. really host that meeting because right. I know. And he would just say, okay, fine, Julianne. And time after time, I'd come back and he'd be like, ah, amazing. So yeah. you found, excuse me, this team member who, and it's not even about necessarily training someone, but it's identifying people that's their zone of genius. That's what okay. they love to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force someone to host and host meetings and be really in that social perspective. That's not their zone of genius.
Right.
So I think it's identifying people and what they love doing and what fires them up, and then giving them the skill set. So it's kind yeah. of that combination.
Right.
But that's truly, for me, the way not only to grow, I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of like admiration around growth and success of a business,
mm-hmm.
which I aspire to, but also even more so, it allows you to have freedom in your mm-hmm. life. If you can empower others to do what they love to do
yeah.
and get like a team really working together to produce it, it frees you up from, you know, having to be on every single call,
right.
having to control every single strategy, burning the midnight oil. I feel like that like hustle and grind narrative right. of I have to do it all.
Yeah.
It's just a story you're telling yourself. You don't right. have to do it all, and you don't have to burn yourself out in New York City. That's yeah. actually not the case for everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that resonates with a lot of young women listening to this who are maybe freelancers right now mm-hmm. or maybe starting something small as well, is learning, you know, like I think after that solopreneur years, right, like you experience, at some point you reach a glass ceiling mm-hmm. and a threshold of, okay, I cannot grow this unless I outsource X, yeah. Y, Z.
Right.
And it's kind of the question of how do I break through that limiting belief of, okay, I don't know if I can because financial reasons or the controlling aspect, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think a lot of people face that, but totally. They don't often hear about like maybe the process of how you break through that.
Yeah. And again, like that is all very real. Mm-hmm. So Dialogue and the success of our company has been solely referral basis. That's the yeah. only way we've ever gotten clients. Wow. Close to 100 clients in 6 years. So it is the value of our reputation and quality work is everything to me. I have mm-hmm. such high expectations that we never falter with the yeah. quality of work that we do. But it's not necessarily in saying that you can like offload it. It's mm-hmm. just knowing that you can find people that actually will do it better.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
and you don't, they might be junior and you might think, well, they don't have my expertise, but you know, there's so much that you bring as an individual. But when I get into a conference room with my team, sometimes the best, most creative ideas come from our intern who's mm-hmm. still in school, who works yeah. for us hourly.
It's, right.
And it's not this, I think sometimes New York can tell this narrative of like hierarchy and mm-hmm. pay your dues, but it's a matter of just letting everyone do what they do best and live in their zone of genius and
right.
collaboratively, you know, produce what yeah. the work. So
how did you handle, let's say, times when you and a client parted ways?
Mm-hmm.
I think this one is definitely a question that a lot of freelancers and those who start their yeah. own client service-based business often struggle with as well, right? And
yeah.
and I think that's something, once again, not many people talk about as much, because it's on the less sexy side yeah. of business, right?
Well, I think so many things I've learned over the years. First of all, at the beginning, I took any and every client that would take me.
Okay.
I yep. was like so excited just to have the yeah. revenue come in.
Yeah.
And I completely took on the wrong clients that were not needing our specific skill set, or they weren't ready for our strategy.
Right,
so it's
right.
taken me years to be able to, in the new business process, I interview the brand. And I asked them, do you have a robust brand marketing strategy, PR strategy, social strategy? All of this needs to be in place before we get started.
Right.
So I think that was the first big shift of recognizing that in order for you to do your best work, and again, it's tricky because of course, like, you can't go out and be that picky off the bat. You do have to, like,
totally.
And I was offering, like, very deep dish discounted rates and retainers for, like, the early stages. So there's a lot of, like, you know, piecing it together at the beginning.
Of
but
course.
I think recognizing that taking on a client that's not ready or aligned with you can actually do more damage to your morale, your team's morale, the quality of your work. You're not going to produce the same quality work. So that was really tricky. But also recognizing the importance of, I used every single time we would lose a client, I would take it deeply personal. Like I would be absolutely gutted.
Right.
And I kind of started to realize the importance of asking for feedback and recognizing it. And what I was really proud is that over the years, okay, this is an early stage startup who has a very short runway and they're running out of money and it's a financial decision.
Right.
Or this is a company that, you know, we've worked with for 3.5 years. We built the foundation of their program and we've done such a great job. They're hiring an in-house team of 4 people. That's not a failure for us. That's actually a success.
Right.
And so starting to really recognize, and even to this year, get to the point where I can identify, you know, one of the clients, for example, that we had worked with for about 6 months, I said, I actually think this will be more efficient for you to hire someone in-house sitting right next to the founder because there's so much intricacies to the service they offered that we ended up being sort of this like messenger back and forth. And I said, this isn't productive to have an agency, so let me help you hire. And I put together a JD and recommended some individuals for them to hire in-house. So it took some time to get over that like emotion of, oh my gosh, either we're dropping a client or they're dropping us. But I can say in all the years, what was always paramount to me is maintaining Dialogue's reputation and ensuring that even if we part ways for whatever reason, people will say great things about Dialogue and working with us. And that's what's most important.
Yeah.
So I think it's a journey, but getting to a point where you don't see that as a failure and see it as actually sometimes an opportunity because it frees you up to work with a better client that's more aligned.
Right. And I like that you mentioned the importance of actually, again, of course, there's nuance to the beginning days of when you need the revenue and you're at your 20-some-year-old in New York City and you need that money to pay rent. But at the same time, I agree. Like, I think as you develop more, you know, and I have my own social media branding agency as well. And that was something I experienced in recognizing that it's not great to take on clients that are not aligned, especially let's say maybe it's financial reasons, they're just not at a revenue point yet that they should be taking on someone like you. And it's similar as you said, right? Initially it's like you take it personally, as most of us will probably experience in the early days, but you recognize the importance of alignment. But something that I saw a parallel to is in dating, right? Similar to when you are going on initial dates, I know you've, you know, you're not in the dating scene anymore, but I'm sure you hear the stories with girlfriends in New York and when you meet someone that is just not aligned with you, and to carry that on,
you can feel it.
And so it was kind of a fascinating aha moment to see when I had a very aligned client, it felt like this. And same with dating, when you meet someone and it's actually a genuine alignment of everything across the board, from just natural chemistry to compatibility on vision or whatever, you feel it like this.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
And I feel like with dating, like as much as there, I think there is an intuition to it. And I'm a big believer. Like I've been married, I've been with my husband 10 years and we've been married 4.5. And we've put so much work and like commitment into making our relationship work. It's not, I think there used to be these like fairy tale stories of like finding your soulmate, it's perfect.
Right.
And
right.
all the couples that I admire, that I recognize, they really committed to working on each other for, right. on themselves for the other.
Right.
And so there's certainly a lot of, you know, commitment and work that goes into it. But I do think from the get-go, there's that intuition.
Yes.
Similar with a client, similar with anything.
Right.
And we often like ignore it. But I had that intuition on the first date with my husband.
Yes.
And
yes.
it, like, you just know it.
Yeah.
And so, and again, it's not like soulmates and whatever. Totally. Like, trust me, we've gone through the works and, totally. And ups and downs. But I do think, like, similarly with a client, when you can feel that mutual respect mm-hmm. and, you know, admiration.
Yeah.
It's, you can't ignore that. And likewise, the opposite.
Right. And it's great timing, too, because I wanted to transition into, you know, your relationship, something that honestly, from that coffee conversation, I was like, wow, there's a lot of great nuggets here for young women to understand. And like you said, right, there is a lot of work that is put into any awesome relationship.
Yeah.
But I think just starting from the intuition part, something I definitely have noticed as a pattern is a lot of people that I look up to, especially in their romantic relationships, more often than not, usually like 90% of the time, they've always said something along the lines of like they knew very much in the beginning. And again, in books, we might see it as like, oh, a romantic fairy tale or that's Hollywood. But to me, that was like, that's an interesting pattern I've noticed. Like a lot of people actually, to some degree, knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, just lit up by hearing you share like what you showed me that picture that you wrote on the bathroom,
my gosh,
right?
Yeah.
It was like so cool. I was like, wow, like, you know, and you were younger too. You were like 23.
23 when I met him.
Yeah. And you shared that story of, you know, him like coming to your birthday and like him making that comment to his friend. So I'm like, wow, it is fascinating to me that it does work both ways. And again, I think I always heard that as well and took that into account. And of course wanted that for myself and noticed the differences when I did notice something like that. But hearing that in real time is also very like, okay, like, you know, that's a thing. But can you share a little bit about just kind of your thought process on intuition and maybe times, maybe it's observing friends that you saw were questioning in the beginning and you also just knew for them like this was not it type of thing?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I can't describe it anything more than an intuition. Like, I came home from our first date, and I was living with a roommate at the time, and I came home to her. I was like, oh, I'm marrying this guy 1,000%.
That's
and
so crazy.
He came to my birthday a week later with a couple of his friends with all these, like, presents. He had just met me, and his buddy was like, ooh, that's a little much, dude. Like, right. And he was like, oh, I'm going to marry this girl. So, and
so
it's hilarious because he would kill me for even saying that. Like, Rob's the opposite of that. He's not at all, like, gushy romantic.
Totally.
So we both had this, like, intuition, but does that mean everything is, like, fairy tale and perfect? Absolutely not.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
There were times where we lived apart. He had moved back to Paris. I was still in New York.
Right.
We did long distance for a while. We've gone through pandemics together. We've gone through parenting together. We've had a child together. Like, there's a lot of difficulties and challenges along the way. But I do think that intuition generally is there at the early. And also, in the flip side, friends of mine that have been divorced or have broken up with people that they've been with long term, they too have that gut intuition.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It's really easy to ignore it.
Yes.
Either being cynical and ignoring, you know, the fairy tale story or ignoring the like red flag that's in your mind. But I think, it's important to just not that it needs to feel perfect. And it just honestly, I think the key to it, like I said, is two people committed to working on themselves in a marriage, in a relationship, in a partnership.
Yeah.
As long as you're open to being self-aware, learning about yourself, like learning how you can be, you know, more understanding or like adapt yourself to be a better person for the couple. That to me is what I see as like a great long-term success.
Yeah.
I think it's when people are just stuck in their ways and saying, well, he's the way he is. He'll never change. Or she's the way she is. That's where it starts to get tricky because you also grow a lot in 11 years and you change.
Right. And that makes me fascinated too, right? I think being in a city like New York where casual dating, fun dating is very prominent, right? How did you manage both of you, because you guys were on the younger side for New York, right? And so I think that's really cool is that you met someone, ended up
dating that person long term, and then also in those years you started dialogue and you mm-hmm. were kind of in the building process of your life and your career. How did that look like with having a relationship? Because I think sometimes people go, oh, maybe I should wait until I'm at a certain stage in life to then accept something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, I think sometimes people will look back and be like, wow, I shouldn't have passed up that opportunity when I met someone, yeah. all because of this belief, like, I should wait until I'm this age or after I've done this in my career. And I'm sure you've seen that or heard that through, you yeah. know, friends and mutual friends. But what was that like for you? And of course, your husband as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think one big piece of advice I got from a mentor in my 20s, Rob's career was growing quickly. I was, mm-hmm. my career was growing quickly. And I had this story in my head of, I want this dream power couple, you know, and like,
okay.
I'm so excited to be like, you know, to have this equal and a partnership. And that was so crucial and important to me. Mm-hmm. And my mentor at the time was like 10 years older. And he was like, Julianne, that's great, but you're in this for the long run.
Yeah.
And having that power couple, like, think about how my husband's name is Robinson. Like, how's Robinson going to be as a dad? How mm-hmm. is he going to be as, you mm-hmm. know, like, your partner when you're in your 80s? And I was right. like, oh, please, like, whatever. That's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, all that matters right now is that we're hustling, grinding, we're growing together. He was launching his consultancy, I was launching mine. We were just like this power duo.
Right.
And it could not be more accurate. Like, your, whether you commit to this person in a marriage or a partnership, like, ultimately you're wanting to build a life with this individual. Yes. And you're going to grow and your life and your priorities are going to shift and change. Mm-hmm. And I can say that entering our new phase with a year and a half daughter, mm-hmm. Rob's like the most incredible dad. And wow. our values are so aligned in terms of our family. And so I think it's really important to look at someone, not just of like a piece of paper, check the box of mm-hmm. what is shiny and exciting in a yeah. partner in your 20s, but right. really think like about your values and what matters most to you. Mm-hmm. And as hard as it is to think of your 30s, your 40s, your 50s and onward, mm-hmm. just seeing this as like a holistic relationship and all the values yeah. it can bring. And then I also just think that it's so crucial to find someone that like will support you. And it's so corny mm-hmm. to say that, but mm-hmm. like Rob is the ultimate feminist. Like yeah. my success makes him most proud, and right. he never once has ever like felt threatened by having a wife who is an entrepreneur.
Right.
He's always supported me in my endeavors.
Right.
And I think like that you can identify really early on in a relationship. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it's so crucial if it is something that, you know, you're pursuing your dreams, that you both are, you know, there for one another.
Right.
And in my case, I was very lucky that we kind of just like have not followed traditional like gender norms of like right. what a man and a woman and all that story. We just sort of have followed our own dreams.
Yeah.
And it's led to just, you know, the most supportive partner in my life. But I think, right. again, you can identify that really early on in seeing how someone is supporting your little dreams. Because yeah. dialogue was just a small seed of right. an idea, you know, when I was 27. Right. So.
How was it when you were building that? Because I'm sure you were also allocating a lot of time to focus on growing that. And I know you mentioned that he was also starting his own consulting business at the time too. But what did that, like, did you guys ever have to have a conversation of, hey, you know, we're going to, at this chapter, prioritize the relationship a little bit less in any mm-hmm. way because we're building? Or, and I don't want to say less like in a negative way, but just acknowledging that, hey, we're both, you know, 27 and 30 and we see a future for ourselves together. We see us building a family. We're going to do this now so that we can have that life for our family. Was that a conversation you guys ever had to have? Or did you feel like the speed was the same even when you were, you know, building up the companies?
I feel like being really clear on what your priorities are and what is most important to you is really vital because, again, like, I look at a lot of my friends who have started, you know, pre-seed startups, and right. they do have to absolutely burn the midnight oil and, mm-hmm. and, you know, work their ass off. But really am always so careful to subscribe to this hustle and grind narrative of New York.
Right.
I grew up with it. My career, you know, developed in this, like, you have to show face. You have to be at work till, mm-hmm. you know, 9 p.m. Right. You have to be the first thing. Like, all of this, like, narrative, working on weekends, always available. It's only gotten exponentially worse with, like, you know, Slack and, right. you know, just 24/7 social media and whatnot. Yeah. But Rob and I, when we were building our careers, or when I was starting Dialogue, it was never this notion of, like, we're stopping everything else in our life
right.
and doing this. It was very important to us that we had a balance. So mm-hmm. we've always, every summer we go to France to spend time with his family in the south of France. Mm-hmm. And it was really important that when crafting our dreams and our goals, mm-hmm. we preserved that freedom of mm-hmm. travel mm-hmm. And being able to work anywhere, everywhere.
Yeah.
That we, you know, really prioritized other passions of ours outside of work. So we really mm-hmm. love film and art and fashion and decor and yeah. all of these aspects that make us happy humans beyond our work. Mm-hmm. We really ensured that those were preserved. So mm. I think it's really important. Sometimes it can feel like entrepreneurship is this all or nothing, but
right.
I don't think it has to be. I think you can find a way to be successful, grow a company, you know, achieve all of your goals, but mm-hmm. also have a life outside of it. And
right.
so that was, like, our value set that we agreed upon
yeah.
early on and
yeah.
preserved that together.
Yeah. And something that I really took from our last conversation too was how you shared that. I think one of the things was, now that you guys have a daughter together, that she is not the center of your mm. universe, but that she's a part of your universe.
Yeah.
And I think I share that with a girlfriend too, like later that week. I was like, guys, this is, like, so super cool. But can you share more about that philosophy? Because I do think that is so key. I think regardless if someone's listening right now and they are an entrepreneur or will be an entrepreneur and a mom at the same time, I like that aspect of, like, oh wow, like, because you said, you know, you bring her when you travel, and she's been on many, many flights,
36
right?
36 flights.
Yeah, a lot of flights. And yeah. I think, right, I'm thinking, wow, like, I feel like my parents would judge me for that. I'm sure mm-hmm. there's a good chunk of society that would mm-hmm. judge me for that. And that's why I was like, I like that you, what's it called, like, you do life to the beat of your own drum.
Yeah.
And again, having that kind of fundamental view of, she's a part of our universe, she's not the center of it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, man, this world of parenting has really blown open so many
totally
doors for me. But I think what's so vital, there's so much judgment and preaching when it
right.
comes to motherhood or parenting, and I think what's so vital is, like, I'm not going to sit here and say it should be done this way. It's
right.
so personal. And as long as you are, you know, loving your child, supporting them in their exploration, mm-hmm. providing a predictable environment, I think there's, like, three main things that really, like, you know, help a child flourish.
Right.
Whatever, you know, strategies or approach or decisions you make is what's best for you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just say that, you know, with a caveat, because the amount of stories that were put on me when I was pregnant of,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be like this. You're never going to travel
oh,
again. You're never going to work
yeah.
out again. Your company's
yeah.
going to, like, you'll never have a work ethic.
Right.
You're not going to have your ambition, yada, yada, yada. All these
yes.
horrible things that people will say, like, this is the way it's going to
yeah.
be. So I think it's so important to recognize you have your own experience. Our experience, we bring in our cultures. My husband's French. I'm from Canada. And I think a lot of French society actually
mm-hmm.
pushes this narrative and believes in this narrative that there's kind of two philosophies, where your child is the center of your universe,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful notion.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of subscribe to the idea that Navy's not the center of our universe. And that mm-hmm. usually gets, like, like a gasp.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
how
yeah.
could you say that? But she is part of our universe. And
yes.
she's the most important part of our universe.
Right.
Like, she is, you know, the most important element in my life. But we have her just part of what we do. So,
yeah.
Like you said, we travel quite a bit. She's been on 36 flights in a year and a half. And
mm-hmm.
we bring her with us. And it's not always... it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not, like, it's not always, like, sunshine and butterflies, but that's something that's important to us and our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's part of that. We are, you know, we really are into food, and,
yeah.
and I'm really into cooking. And so
yeah.
she's been my sous chef since she's, like, a month old, where she, like, smells the basil, or, like, she plays, you know, cutting and pretending and whatnot. And so
yeah.
I actually see that philosophy of making your child part of your universe, not the center of it, a gift to them, because
mm-hmm.
you're exposing them now to all of your passions. You're maintaining your identity as a mom and, like, what makes you happy and fills you up.
Yeah.
And you're now banding all of that like experience to your child versus mm-hmm. if you make them the center of the universe and you stop, you know, your fitness or your travel or right. your passions or your social life or your friends,
right.
you're not, you know, expanding your child's like yeah. universe in that sense.
Right. So. How did you deal, if you did deal with it in regards to, let's say, like family or close friends that maybe would try to input their opinion too much yeah. on like, hey, you know, like, you shouldn't be taking her on that many flights type of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm actually curious just for myself because I know that I've always been the type of individual that done things my own way. Mm-hmm. And that being said, right, there's always a lot of resistance to that, whether it's friends talking about it with one another or sharing their mm-hmm. opinion to you, thinking they're trying to be a good friend, of course, but maybe overly sharing that opinion, or of course the parents, right? Yeah. I know mine would be like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, you are not a 20-some-year-old in New York anymore. You are a mother, you know? And I'm just like, mm-hmm. and so when I hear a realistic approach of someone that's doing the thing, I'm like, well, here's an example. And I think yeah. that's the same thing with entrepreneurs. It's like, well, she's done it, so I can too, right? So you know totally. How like that ripple effect of like seeing someone else do it helps you think, oh, I can do that as well. Or that it's possible at the very least.
The comments are always there. Mm-hmm. I think my parents are in Canada. I had a more traditional, like, you know, like lifestyle. They both worked in government. It was, yeah. you know, we didn't travel extensively growing up. There's like questions of like, what? Like, even when I told my parents we're mm-hmm. going to live between New York and Paris,
yeah.
we're going to have a partner or apartment in Brooklyn. We're going to have one in Montmartre and we're going to go back and forth. They're like, what? But I think that's okay. And likewise, when we speak about our parenting style, you'll have friends that are like, whoa, like that wouldn't work for me.
Right.
But as long as people will be surprised and people will have opinions, but as yeah. long as they respect it, and there's yeah. a big difference. So
right.
like
that's
my
true.
Parents will be like, how does that work? But they're not going to judge me for it. They'll be like, okay, like, you do you. Or
yeah.
I'll have friends that'll be like, wow, you know, I would never take my child out to a restaurant. We take Navy to our like neighborhood restaurant every single Sunday.
Yeah.
And the first couple of weeks, like we have a little family like lunch Aww. Basically. And the first couple of times we took her, she was like throwing food. Everyone's screaming and we're like, oh my God, like this is so embarrassing. And then after a couple of weeks, she started to acclimate and get used to it.
Mm.
And now she'll sit without a phone, without any social media, like just chilling, eating her French fries and like relaxing for a full hour.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
so, but you know, you'll have friends that are like, I would never take my child to a restaurant.
Right.
Like how... It's fine. Each
yeah.
to their own, and you'll have those like comments. But
yeah.
as long as people are just respectful for like, you know, I don't agree with some of the techniques that I know other, you know, parents use, but I don't judge them for it. That works for
totally.
Them. This works for us.
Totally.
So.
Yeah. And something else that I like that you've done too is the structure that you shared with me on how like you actually are very mindful of how you allocate time with her mm-hmm. in the morning. And then during like work hours, you're here. And then after, I don't know, I think it was like 4 p.m. or something
yeah.
that like you are home, you and your husband are spending time with her.
Yeah.
You, since you enjoy cooking and you love her being a part of that, like
yeah.
you have that moment with her. Can you share how you've been able to kind of like narrow that structure down? And also I think like have that vision of shared values. I think you had shared that you have it on your fridge or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, it's like, again, some people might think, oh, wow, that's so structured. But I think there's actual... there's a secret of success there of like these are some of the things we've learned down the road and now we implement certain things to help
totally.
Continue that.
I think the structure is yeah something crucial for us at least like
right.
at the beginning we were like we're just gonna wing it like
totally.
We don't need support like we don't need help like we're just gonna wing it we're like we have flexible schedules and
yeah.
then you just like absolutely drown in it and
yeah.
I think someone described it to me where it's like when you have a child your pie of whether it's like social life, work, your personal, you know, time for hair and nails
yes.
and working out, your personal time, your relationship, you know,
mm-hmm.
before you had this like this, you know, nicely balanced circle.
Yes.
Your child comes in and takes maybe like 70% of like that.
Right.
With pleasure.
Right.
But it now means that you need to be so thoughtful with what you do in that 30% of
oh,
your
yes.
like your time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your if work is a huge priority as an entrepreneur, it's getting help, finding great people that can support, whether it's your parents or a nanny or a daycare,
right.
to allow that structure time. So it really helped me to say, okay, we wake up with Navy, I'm like present. We have breakfast together. We get ready together. Yeah. We have that time from like, you know, 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning. Then at 8:30, I switch to work mode. And right. from 8:30 to like 3:30 or 4, I'm in work mode. I'm focused on my clients and meetings. And it allows me just the freedom to not try and spread mm-hmm. myself too thin.
Yeah.
And then when I come home, phone is like plugged in, airplane wow. mode. I'm cooking dinner. I'm with my daughter and I'm present. And wow. I think having that structure before, when you're like, oh, I can wing it, I can take calls while she's napping in the house, trust me, I tried.
Yeah,
did not work for me. I have to have that like very clear. And my husband too, like, we identified what was important to him, what he needed to preserve for his individual time. Mm-hmm. And before we had Navy, we actually talked about what are like our non-negotiables that make us who we are.
Yes,
you and Rob was like, he works out like 2 to 2.5 hours every day, like, and he's like, if I don't do that, I will lose myself. And mm-hmm. I said, if I don't have a social life where I can connect with my girlfriends and really just like find time to, I'm such an extrovert in that totally. sense, I'll lose myself. So those were our non-negotiables.
Okay.
And we schedule our lives around ensuring that each other, we have that space. So yes. I think
that's awesome.
It's, you know, really important to, you can't necessarily do it all. I think that's sort of like a strange narrative,
right?
But you can just be more thoughtful in the shift of your, you know, time that you have now,
right?
How to prioritize what makes you feel most like yourself.
Yep.
Yourself, your relationship, whether it's like having a babysitter and going out and doing the things you love to do with your
right.
partner,
right?
And yeah, and I think the biggest learning isn't necessarily about structure, but it's just about like trying to like wing it in yeah. parenting.
Yeah.
Every time we try to wing it, it blows up in our
right,
face.
Right, right. So. And what I like about it though too is because A, I think my natural instinct would be, oh, like let's probably wing this. I mean, we'll figure it out as yeah. we go. But I think from when I hear you share that, to me it's almost like having this vision that guides you in a more clear direction versus when you're winging it, you're kind of like all over the place and not going specifically in a direction. That's yeah. I think helpful for everyone as a team and as a unit. And so I think that's what's fascinating is like hearing that. I honestly I've never heard anyone share that, you know. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know, 5-8 years from now, like when I'm in that stage of life where I may be a mom, like I think that's something I'm going to remember.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, it's like I think sometimes we don't really have the opportunity to hear these like, oh, like these nuanced ideas of like mm-hmm. this is actually a potential way for me to approach it myself, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's such a scary thing. Like I was right. petrified when I was pregnant of like, I'm gonna lose myself, I'm gonna lose my company, I'm gonna lose my friendships, I'm gonna lose my travel, I'm gonna lose my adventure.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it was really crippling. And I think it's just a matter of knowing it's not this narrative you can have it all,
right.
but you can still maintain what you love and what's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just about being more thoughtful with your time. And,
yeah.
And honestly, the like scheduling and ensuring that you carve out time for my morning workouts. Mm-hmm. I carve out time, you know, for a manicure once a week.
Yeah.
I carve out time to see my girlfriends. I carve out time to, you know, call my parents. Like having that, you know, and asking for what you need and for your partner also.
Yeah.
And just being a little bit more like thoughtful with it just ensures mm-hmm. that you have that balance, because it can, you know, tip really quickly if you're not
totally,
you know,
totally
structuring it.
Final few questions. I think this one's gonna be really fun. Like one thing you would share with your younger self, let's say when you were 25 in business, career, and then also relationships. And I would separate relationships with romantic as well as girlfriends, because this is a very predominantly young female audience that yeah. they're in that first few years out of post-grad and they're dealing with all three
mm-hmm.
and all of them are hitting at once, yeah. right? Girlfriend drama, dating sucks in New York or LA or wherever they are,
yeah.
and figuring out their career path and, you know, hitting that wall.
Oh my God, that's like, so 25-year-old me, let me think, from a career perspective, it's interesting. I think what I would have told myself is you have no idea what potential is out mm-hmm. there and what mm-hmm. potential you have.
Yeah.
So I kind of would say, okay, if I can get 3 clients as a consultant, mm-hmm. that is success and that's it. I made yeah. it. And working with Ben, he would always like open up and unlock the next level. So he'd yeah. be like, well, what would it look like if you quadrupled your revenue, or you hit like, you know, a seven-figure revenue goal. And I was never, are you kidding me? No.
Right, right.
And then you achieve that. And then even now, still to this day, I'm thinking, no, we've hit success. Like, we have a really successful company. I don't think we've even scratched the surface.
Wow.
And so I think it's really important just to like not limit yourself in what, because I see a lot of friends like, you know, in early 30s now, where a lot of my girlfriends are extremely successful in their careers. They have made it. Like, we're talking really great salaries and great roles and great titles.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have just like, so what? I made it. Like, I achieved the VP level, or I've hit this, like, you know, salary goal. And if you limit yourself to just that's the end goal, then there's just so much more beyond that. So I would think just like continue to challenge your notion of what's possible and where you can go next.
Right.
But, you know, don't get too stuck in just one end goal in life, because I think, like, you know, it just keeps evolving. So, and in terms of friendships, I think as I got older and also traveling, my time got limited of being able to, like, you know, when I was in back, I was back in New York, I only had, say, like a week to catch up with friends. And I think it's just about prioritizing. I mean, it's so like cliche, but just prioritizing people that make you feel amazing. Because I think there's often times where you have these people in your life that you've been friends with them for so long, but they drain you. They don't support you. They don't they don't bring anything to your life.
Yep.
And I think as I noticed like a shift in my 30s of just not putting up with the bullshit and just really wanting to have people surround me that love me and support me, not this competitiveness or tearing down. Like, I really can say that, like, we just don't have that energy in our life, my husband and I, in terms of our friendships. And Rob had a really, when we moved back to New York 2 years ago, he was very adamant on the notion of, like, we run our own race. We're not going to pretend to be something we're not. We're not going to be around people that are inauthentic and trying to be, you know, showcasing through XYZ. We're going to be around people that are authentically themselves, good, bad, and the ugly, and just are genuine. And I think having that, those type of people in your life is just the most important. And relationships, I think it's like when you're contemplating committing to someone in your life, the biggest question is like, is this person willing to work on themselves, and am I willing to work on myself? And the amount of times of failed partnerships I've seen, it's because the person just won't, they're not self-aware, they won't work on their, you know, past trauma, their experiences. They're, and I think everybody has to continue that, like, development of, you know, whether it be through therapy, whether it be just through reading, whatever form, to just understand your limitations and commit to that work together is what makes it work. So I think as long as you can see that your partner is in it to, like, really try and improve themselves and grow as an individual, because you can't change someone. You'll never be able to change that person. They have to change themselves. So I think that's just, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect on paper and check all the boxes, but you just have to feel that they're willing to work and change for you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
For it to work.
Wow. Oh, that's profound, especially because I noticed that you said that earlier too, that the self-awareness and understanding and desire to grow as an individual for also a bigger thing such as the relationship, and obviously for oneself. But no, I love that, just because I'm very into personal growth. This podcast is too. And so something I take into consideration for things that I observe in my own relationship, as well as things that I see in close friends that are saying, like, hey, I'm not sure, you know. And I think these are good nuggets to pass along to the next generation.
And I think, like, oftentimes, you know, you know, I had a really nice upbringing and wonderful supportive parents. You think, oh, I don't have anything to work on. I'm good. And the amount of, like, from our couples therapy, that it really just made me realize, like, wow, like, there's so much that I can be self-aware. And it doesn't mean that just because you didn't have necessarily, like, a traumatic upbringing, that you don't have work to do on yourself.
Right.
And so I think it's just being open to, like, the baggage and the experiences and the insecurities and the, like, all of this that you bring to the table in your 20s. All of that affects how you enter a relationship, and just being open to, like, hearing and learning about it, whether or not it's, like, you know, a traditional sense of, you know, self-awareness or if it's just being curious about yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, I love that. Last two, any book recommendations?
Oh my goodness.
Can be business.
I'm reading
life.
An outstanding one. It's in my purse right now. Okay. So I will tell you it. And
okay,
and
well, we'll can definitely put share it in there. On the story.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything from the past that just sticks out to you that maybe business, life, personal development, or fiction even?
Oh, bookwise.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, book. Yeah. I really liked Atomic Habits.
Okay. Yeah.
That was really fantastic. It's killing me. The book I'm reading last night, I just started it. It's called Almost the Same, I think.
Okay.
And it's just a notion on how much in life we try to forecast, whether it be finances and investments mm-hmm. or planning your business mm-hmm. and like strategically planning for growth.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of life is unexpected. And you mm-hmm. think of like, he gave the example of the economist who wrote predictions for 2020, 2021. They did right. not predict the pandemic. They did right. not predict the war of, you know, between Russia and Ukraine. They yep. didn't predict all these elements, and those have the biggest impact on our society and life. Yep. And so as an entrepreneur, you can have all the what ifs like planned out, mm-hmm. but you're not, there always are going to be the uncertainty.
That's so true.
That really impact it. Mm-hmm. And also, he had a really interesting element around your happiness is mm-hmm. actually a notion of your expectations and reality and the gap between it. And so he gave the example of how in the 50s that was the era where people were most satisfied with their life, and it's because there wasn't this huge disparity mm-hmm. of difference. But everyone, you know, in middle class kind of had their bungalows and their Chevrolets and they went camping for their holidays. And now mm-hmm. in the world of social media, there's huge disparity of people on private jets or traveling around the world mm-hmm. and you can compare yourself and you'd shift your expectations to it.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't realize you're really perfectly happy in mm-hmm. in what you have in front of you. So
right.
that book was outstanding. I'll triple check the title and, yeah. and tell you. But we have a book club at Dialogue, so my team each month
cool.
we read a different book. And yeah, those have been two that really stood out to me.
Love that. Last question, and something I ask every guest on the show, but in reflection of everything, you know, you've building Dialogue and your relationship with your husband and your daughter and everything you've experienced in life, what would you say truly fulfills you in life?
I think it's something that I've been kind of conscious of. There, I listened to a podcast from a professor of happiness at Harvard.
What's his, do you remember his name by chance?
I will send okay. you that to my memories.
Yeah, like I might have been listening to him before too.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And it was actually a Tim Ferriss interview, so I can.
Oh,
I can,
is it Arthur C. Brooks by chance?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Wasn't that amazing?
Yes. So amazing. I sent so that to good. My boyfriend. I was like, because he listens to Tim yeah. as well. And I'm like, you're going to love this episode.
And it's a long one, but yes. I listened to it over like yeah. you know, 4 or 5 days.
Yes.
But he really had something that clicked with me, and it was his anti-bucket list. Did you hear that part?
It's so weird. Just we're Wasn't talking about this earlier today, like yes, the reverse bucket list yes. type of thing. Yes, yes.
And
yes.
so I'm very ambitious. Wow. I have all these goals. I just mentioned in this interview how important it is to dream big and
yes.
like not limit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so important is to like write them out, have the vision board, like really approach it, but cross them off, because at the end of the day, yes, I would love to grow Dialogue even more and I would love to achieve XYZ, mm-hmm. but I am so, so happy and grateful
yeah.
for my life today, for how fortunate, you know, mm-hmm. I am with my to have my husband and my daughter in good health and happiness and a community that surrounds us.
Yeah.
And it can get so easy to focus on more going up the ladder.
Yeah.
And you actually realize it's always in like retrospect how mm-hmm. happy you are in the moment. And so
yeah.
when I think about fulfillment, every night I'm just trying to, you know, and oftentimes I've always been a big proponent of like gratitude journals.
Yeah.
But it sometimes just felt like I was like filling out a form.
Yeah.
Whereas like every night I just try and like close my eyes and think of all that I have to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me such fulfillment, because you realize you don't need
Yes.
all the other stuff is gravy. It's like
yes.
amazing to dream big and have more and whatnot, but
yeah.
what you have today is enough. And
yeah.
so I think that really gives me a lot of fulfillment.
Wow. Oh, that's I love that. And it's so ironic that my partner and I, we were talking about
yeah.
reverse bucket list
yes.
earlier this morning.
No
and
way.
He was reflecting on just like his success in business lately, but also recognizing that, you know, he's accomplished everything he once wanted on, you know, his vision board mm-hmm. and his little checklist
yep.
and realizing like, I've done these things, and yeah. and so it's finding that sweet spot, like you said, between wanting to achieve more and wanting to be able to do awesome things in life, but also recognizing like I've done a lot. Yeah. And I'm really grateful and fulfilled to just be where I'm at right now.
And just being aware of how the goalposts shift. Yes. Like, I remember I was thinking of applying to a green card as a Canadian yeah. 5 years ago. And as part of it, you need to have press. You have to be in the press. And I was right. like, never in a million years
for the U.S.
would I. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You have to demonstrate, especially as an entrepreneur, yep, that you have notoriety right. and whatnot. Yeah. And at the time, I had zero press, and I was like, never. And I think it was on a vision board. And then now, I've been fortunate enough to be interviewed and have great press.
Yeah.
And it's always like, well, I want the next level of press. Yeah. And so you don't realize that, like, 5 years ago, that Julianne would be so proud of what yes. I've accomplished. But now wow. I'm like, what's next? So you really mm-hmm. have to be aware of, like, and try and just think of, like, you know, how far you've come. And
yeah.
and at the end of the day, all that matters is, like, your relationships and mm-hmm. your, like, the people around you.
Yeah.
And you can have all the, like, you know, money or experiences or luxury in the world, but if you yeah. don't have, like, the people to, like, enjoy it with,
yeah.
it means nothing. So, yeah, that really resonated. I can't believe that's wow. so interesting.
That's so awesome. Well, Julianne, thank you so much for joining me today thank and you. Sharing everything with the audience. Where can everyone find you? Learn more about Dialogue, share your social media handles or wherever you want them to find
yeah so I'm Julianne Fraser on Instagram. Definitely okay. people can reach out and say hi and whatnot. Dialogue is Dialogue NYC on Instagram, and our website's Dialogue NYC as well.
Awesome, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed this one being pulled from the vault. Again, this episode was originally released in December 2023, but a lot of gems, as most of you guys probably heard. And if you found this episode valuable, please be sure to let me know. DM on Instagram at whatfulfillsyou or at Emily E. Duong. And if you ever have any guest suggestions or things you want to hear more of on this podcast, please be sure to also let me know in the DMs. You can find all of the merch, including the card game, the journal, and the last few hats and hoodies, on the website at whatfulfillsyou.com. Everything is linked in the show notes. Thank you again for tuning in. I will chat with you all next time.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to, like, get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like, even, like, to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.